The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lina Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. November 14th marks World Diabetes Day. Diabetes is a chronic disease that occurs when the pancreas is no longer able to make insulin or when the body cannot make good use of the insulin it produces. The condition can lead to complications such as cardiovascular disease, kidney failure, and lower limb amputation. According to the International Diabetes Federation, well, more than 371 million people in the world have diabetes, and 4 out of 5 people who have diabetes live in low and middle income countries. For more on diabetes, we are joined in the studio by Adeola Akindana, a registered nurse and certified diabetes educator. She is also founder and executive director of Health Beam Outreach, fighting diabetes through education. Mrs. Akindana, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here today. And later on the program, we will talk to Matoka Norris, who has been living with type 1 diabetes for now 30 years. She will share her experience about managing the disease and some of her challenges. We will start discussing diabetes in a moment, but first, VOA's Jody Kapwa reports on a study that looks into the possible prevention of type 2 diabetes.
The $12 million study, known as PREVIEW, is called the largest of its kind. Besides European Union countries, it will include New Zealand, Australia, and Canada. About 2,500 people will take part. Professor Anne Rabin of the University of Copenhagen is the project's chief coordinator.
There are several types of diabetes. There's the one that you get, which is mainly genetic, inherited. It's type 1 diabetes. Another type that you get if you have a lifestyle that gives you diabetes, type 2 diabetes, which is normally related to overweight and obesity. In the old times, it was the elderly who got it, but nowadays it's also children and adolescents who can get type 2 diabetes.
There's also a type called gestational diabetes, which women may get when pregnant. However, this generally disappears after giving birth.
Diabetes means that you can't control your blood glucose, your blood sugar yourself. You need help, for instance, drugs.
Under normal conditions, the pancreas produces the hormone insulin, which keeps glucose levels under control. When that fails to happen, it's called insulin resistance or hyperglycemia. Type 2 diabetes may lack symptoms at first. Later, it may lead to frequent infections that are slow to heal, increased urination, thirst, and hunger, as well as nerve pain or numbness in the extremities. It can result in blindness, amputations, and death. Medication or insulin therapy may be needed. More people are also being diagnosed as having a condition called metabolic syndrome. It's a combination of risk factors, such as obesity, high glucose levels, high blood pressure, and smoking.
It's a stage which normally or often could develop into diabetes or real cardiovascular diseases. So it's kind of a situation where your body is out of control, but you're not yet very ill, or you don't maybe need drugs yet to help.
Professor Rabin explains why such a large study will be done.
Diabetes is exploding. Type 2 diabetes is exploding, and it's related to overweight. And you can call it a diabetes and obesity epidemic, which is worldwide. So we need to do something.
She says developing countries may face a double problem. On the one hand, some people may not be eating enough food. And on the other, some may be eating too much food, containing high levels of salt, fat, and sugar. That can lead to diabesity. The PREVIEW study will weigh the effects of two different diets. The first is widely recommended in EU nations and calls for moderate protein and carbohydrate intake and lots of fiber. The other is based on a previous 6-month study of generally healthy people called Diogenes. It recommends a different mix of proteins and carbs.
they found out that a high-protein, low-glycemic index diet, that is a diet with slowly absorbable carbohydrates and high protein content, was very good at preventing weight gain after weight loss. It's fairly easy to lose weight. Most people can lose weight if they're focused following some diets with lower calories. But after the diet, most people gain weight again. So it's very hard to keep a weight loss for most people.
However, the Diogenes study showed that a high-protein, low-glycemic index diet helps people keep the weight off. Exercise regimens will also be included in the preview study. What's more, researchers will consider the effects of sleep and stress on weight. Some studies have shown that those who get too few hours of sleep are more prone to weight gain. There's also some evidence that too much stress can trigger hormones that can help pack on the pounds. The 3-year clinical research project will be accompanied by a review of demographic data of more than 170,000 people in Europe, Canada, and New Zealand. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Okay, Mrs. Akinada, you heard the report. It seems like diabetes is very much a concern globally. Can you give us a sense of the issue today, specifically with regards to Africans? You are here in the United States and you help people here, but also in your country, Nigeria. So give us a sense of what it looks like when it comes to diabetes among the African population.
Well, what we are finding out is that diabetes is becoming more prevalent in Africa. It used to be that we didn't even know what diabetes meant many years ago, about 100 years ago. But with increased technology, with improvement in the economy, people are becoming more sedentary in their lifestyle. They're working in offices rather than on the farm. And so we're beginning to see that people are gaining more weight and developing diabetes. So it's something that we really need to control through lifestyle.
So there are three types of diabetes, as we heard in the report. Can you tell us about the type of diabetes that is most common that you see very often among the Africans?
Well, like you said, there are three types of diabetes. There's gestational diabetes, which occurs when a woman is pregnant, and oftentimes it goes away, but it indicates that they are at risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And then we have type 1 diabetes. Is about 5 to 10% of the population has type 1 diabetes. It's an autoimmune disease where the body attacks itself, and so they are unable to make insulin. But the most common type of diabetes is type 2 diabetes, and it happens in about 90 to 95% of the people. It's hereditary. People of color, so black people are more apt to develop type 2 diabetes. It runs in the family. And obviously, weight has a lot to do with it in terms of lifestyle. Being overweight increases that risk of someone developing type 2 diabetes.
We have a question from Peter in Ghana. He wants to know, he says, we hear about the lifestyle, European lifestyle, Western lifestyle, that can lead to diabetes. What about the diet that we have in Africa? Can it also lead to diabetes?
Very much so. So just as I indicated earlier, in the past when our fathers and mothers used to go to the farm and the market, they ate high carbohydrate diets, but they burned a lot of that energy because they were very, very active. Now that we have more people doing office jobs, driving cars around, and they continue to eat high carbohydrate foods, that increases the risk of having diabetes because that's a lot of sugar and energy that is not being expended by people.
And Fatima in Sierra Leone say, can a person's weight be indicative of if he or she has diabetes?
It definitely is one of the biggest risks. Just by being overweight doesn't mean that you're going to develop diabetes, but it definitely increases the risk of someone developing diabetes.
Does it mean that someone who is thin that is not at risk of diabetes?
Well, they are less at risk of diabetes, so it doesn't mean that they may not get it. So if they have a family history, just as I indicated before, they are more predisposed to developing the disease. So it's a possibility. But there's been research done. There's something called a research study, the Diabetes Prevention Program. And actually what they found that the single most thing anybody could do to reduce their risk of developing diabetes is changing their lifestyle, which is healthy eating and exercise and moderate weight loss.
We hear this, what you just mentioned, we hear that a lot with regards to not only diabetes, but also other type of medical conditions, even to some extent cancer. So does it mean that really what we eat determines how we feel?
It definitely plays a big role.
Okay.
So it's very important that we eat a balanced meal. We eat fruits and vegetables. You want your plate to be very colorful. So, you know, you eat the greens. You want to avoid eating palm oil and things like that. But you want to eat colorful foods, red pepper, using onions, tomatoes, different things like that, greens, okra. So healthy things. You want at least half of your plate to be vegetable and just about a quarter to be carbohydrates.
Now, as an educator, do you think that people are really aware of diabetes, or is it a disease that still needs a lot of awareness?
It definitely needs a lot of awareness. Many people don't understand what diabetes means. They don't even know that they have it. That's why we call it the silent killer, because a lot of times people don't have the symptoms, so they walk around for many, many years without really knowing that they have the disease. And in the meantime, it's ravaging their body. It could do a lot of damage to the body organs.
Okay. Now we're going to take a short break for the news. When we come back, we will continue our discussion with Mrs. Adeola Akindana. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
The East African Community, in collaboration with the United States Agency for International Development, has launched a 5-year project on EAC Cross-Border Health Integrated Partnership. The project will target key populations, including female sex workers, drug users, transport and other migrant workers, people living with HIV, and other vulnerable community members. The overall objective of the project is to improve health outcomes among the vulnerable communities residing along the eastern, central, and southern African border. Before the Ebola epidemic, many West African hospitals didn't train health workers how to prevent the spread of infectious diseases. Now, facilities are appointing staff specifically for that purpose. The CDC is helping Ebola-affected countries strengthen disease surveillance and laboratory capacity, among other initiatives. For Health Chat, this is Danny C. Fowley.
Welcome back to Health Chat. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic is diabetes. And with us is a registered nurse, a diabetes educator, Mrs. Adeola Akindana. She's also the founder and CEO of Health Beam Outreach. Now, before the break, you talked about some of the risks of for developing diabetes. Now, type 2 diabetes is the most common, according to what I read. What does it take for someone to really avoid getting type 2 diabetes? Does it mean that we understand eating right is one of the steps, exercising is one of the steps, but does it mean that everyone is at risk of developing it?
Not everybody is at risk of developing diabetes. It's important to know your family history. So if there's somebody in your family, say your parents or your grandparents or aunt that has diabetes, then obviously you know it runs in the family. And so you are at a higher risk of developing the disease. The underlining word is risk. So it doesn't mean that automatically you would have the disease. But there are certain things that you could do to reduce that risk, such as modest weight loss. So just losing 10% of your body weight. So say somebody who is about 200 pounds just loses 20 pounds of that weight would help reduce tremendously that risk of developing diabetes. Again, it's a lifestyle change. So exercise has to be really incorporated into that lifestyle. Eating healthy has to be incorporated into that lifestyle, reducing stress. Stress also could trigger developing diabetes. So those are some of the most important things. And also one of the critical things that I've noticed a lot going to Nigeria on medical missions is the high prevalence of hypertension. So people who also have high blood pressure have a risk of developing type 2 diabetes. So it is important to make sure that the blood pressure is under good control.
What about type 1 diabetes? It seems to be more critical or maybe more difficult to address?
Well, it's less common, like we said. It occurs more in children. And it's interesting that you brought that up because I should use this as an opportunity for educating our audience. Recently, a friend of mine just came back from Nigeria and was telling me a story about a child being called a witch because that child has type 1 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes, people who have type 1 diabetes, the body attacks the cells that makes the insulin. So they don't make any insulin. We do need insulin to help transport nutrients into our cells. So for those children or anyone who do have type 1 diabetes, they have to take insulin externally. They have to give themselves the injection every day for survival, for life. So if they don't take that insulin, they will die.
And there's nothing mysterious about it. It's just a medical condition.
That's correct. It's just a medical condition.
Quickly tell us about gestational diabetes. How frequent is it? How common is it among pregnant women?
Well, ideally, the recommendation is that if a woman is pregnant and if they're at risk, again, if they're overweight, if they have familial history of diabetes, that they should be tested at some point during the pregnancy. They call it an oral glucose test, where they check to see if that woman is able to tolerate glucose. Just by the fact that a woman is pregnant, it kind of affects them hormonally, so they might not be able to process the glucose properly. Okay. Now, women that develop gestational diabetes during pregnancy are treated, and oftentimes it goes away. But one of the biggest risks for those women is their babies. They might end up having large babies, mm-hmm. and that might be detrimental in terms of delivery and even to the baby as well. So any woman with a child greater than 9 pounds need to definitely check themselves after giving birth for risk of diabetes.
So before we go, tell us, how often should one get tested for diabetes?
Well, the recommendation, if you are at risk, at least maybe once every 3 years, the person can get tested. And this is something you really have to discuss with your doctor so they could individualize it. When you go for your annual physical exams, that's a good time to get your blood work so that they could check and make sure that everything is okay. Mm-hmm. So people who really, really need to pay attention are people who have family risk, people who are overweight, like we have said, people who have hypertension, people who have high cholesterol, because they are more predisposed to developing the disease. If someone who is over the age of 45, at least also needs to be tested during their physical for that.
Okay, Mrs. Akindana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back to Health Chat. With us now is Matoka Norris. Matoka, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
You have been living with type 1 diabetes for 30 years. And from what some experts say, type 1 diabetes is the chronic type of diabetes. Can you tell us about when you became aware of your status?
I was 10. I started urinating frequently. Started drinking a lot. And when I say a lot, I don't mean a 20-ounce soda 3 times a day. I mean gallons of water.
Wow.
Gallons of liquid a day. So in turn, my body was expelling that, and I was urinating all day. But I was also eating a lot.
Okay. So you felt hungry and thirsty.
It was an unquenchable thirst. And an unbelievable hunger.
Okay. Did you?
I lost so much weight. In a 3-month period, I lost 50 pounds.
Let me ask you this first. Do you have a family history of diabetes?
I do. The thing was, when I was diagnosed at 10, my father was later diagnosed 3 years later. My mother was diagnosed 8 years later.
Oh, so you were the first one to be diagnosed? Your parents didn't know about it?
My grandmother on my mother's side had diabetes, but she kept it to herself.
Oh,
so no one was aware that diabetes actually existed in our family.
So then it became a big surprise, I guess, when you saw your symptoms. Because I was wondering if your parents then were aware, thinking, oh, maybe these are the signs. But if they didn't even know that they had it, then...
No, they didn't. They had no idea. My mother and my brother just realized something was really happening to me.
Okay.
I wasn't the same person. I had absolutely no energy. I got dark circles under my eyes. I just completely started wasting away.
Mm. So then you went to the hospital? Your parents took you to the hospital. Was the diagnosis immediate, or did it take a lot of research?
Actually, the diagnosis was not immediate. My mother took me over the course of 3 months to the doctor, our regular doctor. Mm-hmm. And at first they said, oh, this is a cold, or she's having a really bad flu. There were different diagnoses. But after my brother insisted, and this was my brother, not my father, he insisted that I needed to go to a hospital, emergency room. My mom took me to the hospital, and they did a urine analysis.
Okay.
My blood sugar was amazing. And when I say amazing, it was extremely, extremely high. After they did the urine analysis, they said I had what they call ketones, which is a severe amount of sugar in your urine.
Okay.
The actual blood test showed that my glucose level was 1,200. Just to give you an idea of what that scale is, the normal blood sugar should be between 80 and 120. Mine was 1,200.
Oh, wow.
At that time, I was one of the highest recorded glucose levels. Okay. Because I was still... Literally, I was dying. When I went to the hospital, that day, I was 56 pounds. That evening, when I was actually admitted into the hospital, I was 53 pounds.
Wow. So quickly you lost weight?
Yes.
Okay. So what type of treatment did they put you on right away?
They immediately put me on an IV fluid of insulin.
Okay.
But during my treatment, they discovered that I had another issue. I had an open sore or an abscess.
And this is one of the manifestations of diabetes.
And the thing with the abscess was they were giving me the insulin and my blood sugar was coming down, but it wasn't coming down enough. So they had to search to find out what was keeping my blood sugar up.
Oh.
Once they discovered the abscess, I had to actually have surgery to have it removed. And then they were able to bring me to a normal insulin regimen.
Okay.
I started off taking 2 shots a day, which is extremely difficult for a 10-year-old child.
Yes.
My mother had to learn how to give me insulin. But the first thing that they encouraged was that I needed to know how to give myself insulin.
Yes.
I needed to be aware of the different symptoms that I needed to know about in case my blood sugar went too low.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to know how to react. I needed to be able to let someone know that my blood sugar was down. I may need some orange juice. I may need a spoonful of sugar. Chocolate is good, but the orange juice or the sugar is the quickest way to bring your blood sugar up.
Okay.
Now, the downside to that is your blood sugar may go too high and you may have to counter it with insulin, regular insulin, just a couple of units. But that's also something that they work with you on. They give you what they call a sliding scale.
Yeah.
So the doctors will go over that with you and let you know where you are and when you have to adjust your insulin. Now, the other thing is you have a diet for the rest of your life. You have a diet. It is extremely difficult, again, for a 10-year-old to be on a diet. Anyone living with diabetes knows what that's like. If you're used to going to, say, McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
and ordering a Big Mac, a large fry, and a large drink. A diabetic cannot order that. Yeah. If a diabetic orders a Big Mac, diabetic should not eat the French fries.
So it's about balancing.
You have to balance it. And you also have to think about your activity during the day. Are you active? If you're very active, then they want you to eat smaller meals, but they want you to make sure that you still keep control of your blood sugar. Mm-hmm. So you have to take your blood sugar throughout the day. If you're less active, this is a bad thing. You still have to watch what you eat, but you have to be very, very careful about your carb intake.
Okay.
Carb or carbohydrate intake.
Yeah. Now, you said that you started at the age of 10 with two shots a day. Now, what is your regimen like?
Actually, up to three.
Okay.
Shots a day. When you start taking insulin, your body can develop an immunity of sorts to it.
Okay.
So your body can start to reject the first set of amounts that you've been given.
Mm-hmm.
As you get older and as you have diabetes longer, you start to take more and more insulin. You just have to make sure that you are actually absorbing it into your system because it still needs to control your blood sugar. So the older you get, the more you have to be active, the more attention you have to pay to your diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And the more chance of a complication or two arising. The one thing that doctors do not tell you is that a diabetic will develop complications. They will tell you this is what you need to do to avoid complications.
Okay.
The truth is this is what you do to hold off the complications.
Because you will get the complications?
You will develop the complications. Not each diabetic develops the same complications, but there will be complications. There are diabetics who have had amputations. There are diabetics who have had heart attacks, diabetics who've had strokes, diabetics who lost feeling in their hands, diabetics who have gone blind. They haven't all gone through all of the same things. So there is no one particular area that you are targeted for. Yeah. We have to be aware of everything. The smallest cut could turn into a major amputation for us. Our ladies who love to go get their nails done, we have to be extremely careful with that. If you see a nick on your nails or on your feet, you really, really have to pay attention to that. Because if you lose circulation and you're not paying attention to the fact that that cut is not healing, it can become infected. So diabetes is an extremely complicated disease.
It sounds like lots and lots of challenges. I mean, even asking the question, what is the most challenging? Everything you described is one challenge to another, really. As someone who's living with diabetes, what do you hope to see? Do you have any hopes in terms of new research or treatment?
I would like to see a new treatment. Not every diabetic is insulin dependent. I am, which means, again, I have to take insulin shots every day. It would be nice to find a way for everyone to be able to control their diabetes with an oral medication. Not everyone can do that. But even the ones who are taking the oral medication eventually end up taking insulin shots. So I would just like to see something that makes it more manageable for a diabetic to live a more normal life. We can live a life and you can go about your business. You can go to work, go to school. You can play.
Have children.
You can have children.
Woman that you have,
you can have children.
Yes.
The thing with having children is they don't want you to have more than one or two. Sorry. Just because of the complications a pregnancy can have on a woman. Diabetes is stressful enough, so your body is already under tremendous pressure. When you have a baby, you've just created another pressure. And there is a chance that you can pass the diabetes on to your baby. But you can live like other people. You just have a very narrow window. You can go and eat dinner and have a lovely dinner and maybe have that glass of wine. If I go out to dinner at the same restaurant, if I want that glass of wine, then I might be better off with just eating a salad.
Well, Matoka, thank you so much for sharing your experience and you're looking great. I know you're handling very, very well, even though it's challenging. You look like you're really, really doing good. So thank you for sharing your experience. We wish you all the best in terms of your health. And it was great to have you on Health Chat.
Well, thank you so much, Lenore. I appreciate it. And this is a wonderful show.
Thank you.
And that was Matoka Norris joining us here. And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. For more on today's program, log on to our website at voanews.com/healthchat. I'm your host, Lenor Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.